After dark, the Japanese re-infiltrated some of the positions they had been driven out of around Hill 140. It was the usual hellish night in the ridges. Exhausted Marines trying to fight off incredibly aggressive Japanese slipping all around. It was mortar flares, HE shells, grenades, and small arms fire. I was so tired I held one eye open with the fingers of one hand to stay awake, while clutching a grenade or other weapon with the other hand. The next day, 13 October, 3-5 was ordered to renew the offensive and to straighten our lines, forming a salient on Hill 140. Our battalion was the only unit of the 5th Marines still on the lines and ordered to attack. Snipers raised hell all over the place. It seemed to me the fighting would never end as we fired covering fire for our weary riflemen. Our artillery fired heavy support. The next morning, 14 October, Corsairs made a napalm strike against the Japanese on our right. Company I made a probing attack after a mortar barrage was halted by heavy sniper fire. Companies K and L improved their positions and put out more sandbags and concertina wire. The battalion's efforts at attacking seemed like the gasping of a tired steam engine struggling to pull its string of cars up a steep grade. We were barely making it. Rumors flew that Army troops would relieve us the next day, but my cynicism kept me from believing them. We found some Japanese rifles and ammunition in our area. Hidden under pieces of corrugated iron, I discovered two boxes containing about a dozen Japanese grenades. I suggested to an NCO that we take them in case we needed them during the coming night, but he said we could get them later if necessary. We got busy on firing missions with our mortar, and the first time I glanced back toward the boxes, the souvenir hunters had moved in and were emptying them. Another mortar man and I yelled at the scavenging pests. They left, but all the Japanese grenades were gone. A wave of hope and excitement spread through the ranks that evening when we got solid information that we would be relieved by the Army the next morning. I got less sleep that night than ever. With the end in sight, I didn't want to get my throat slit at the last moment before escaping from the meat grinder. During the morning of 15 October, soldiers of the 2nd Battalion, 321st Infantry Regiment, 81st Infantry Division, Wildcats, began moving single file into our area. I couldn't believe it. We were being relieved at last. As the soldiers filed by us into position, a grizzled buddy squatting on his battered helmet eyed them critically and remarked, "Sledgehammer, I don't know about them dog faces. Look how many of them wearing glasses, and they look old enough to be my daddy. Besides, them pockets on their dungaree pants sure do look baggy." "They look fine to me. They're our replacements," I answered. "I guess you're right. Thank God they're here," he said reflectively. His observations were correct, though, because most of our fellow Marines hadn't reached the age of 21 yet, and Army dungarees did have large side pockets. "We sure are glad to see you guys," I said to one of the soldiers. He just grinned and said, "Thanks." I knew he wasn't happy to be there. By 15 October, the Marines had compressed the Umerbrogel pocket to an area of about 400 to 500 yards. Yet the soldiers of the 81st Infantry Division faced 6 more weeks of fighting before the process of constant pressure and attrition wiped out the final vestiges of Japanese opposition.
This ends Disc 6.